if I really want to live a deep life with deep connections and deep impact with those that I love in my family and with my partner, I need to understand how I'm bumping up against them. And there's great power in that.
Family life is essential. Jim and I are on a mission to help you live the best one. You'll hear personal stories from thought leaders of strengths and struggles with proven strategies to help you make the most of your 18 summers. I'm your co-host, Jamie Shields.
Hey, 18 Summers Tribe, Jim and Jamie back with another episode. And I'm looking forward to having our guest today. He's a social entrepreneur, and he also specializes in father-son connection experiences. And obviously, that is a lot of overlap for our community. So Luke, thanks for being here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I had a chance to catch up on a few recent episodes and love what you two are up to. So thrilled to have this conversation today.
Ditto. Awesome. Thanks for being here. And now, Luke, it's Entrup?
Entrup, yes.
Entrup.
I was just calling you out in a polite way.
I don't even think I said it wrong yet.
You didn't say it at all. So we're good.
So good. Well, Luke, tell us, how did you get into this?
Oh, well, I got into this actually many, many years ago when I was in my early 20s. I was kind of lost in the world, did not have a sense of purpose, was feeling a bit kind of dull. And my father invited me to a men's weekend when I was 22 years old. And I found myself surrounded in the woods by 80 men who were just living lives of purpose and mission and kind of on fire with their lives. And it really inspired me. And I found myself really knowing the moment when I passed from being a boy into a man on that particular experience. And it profoundly kind of changed the direction of my life. And I found myself surrounded by really good men for several years, kind of being mentored and shown the ways of these rites of passage. These rites of passage have always been there in our culture until the last couple hundred years. And there were always a group of mentors and elders that would take the children and help them become adults. And that happened for me. So I was super blessed and have made it part of my work to reintroduce these ways back into our modern culture.
Very cool. Now, why don't we unpack rite of passage a little bit? Because I think a lot of people don't understand it. What is a rite of passage and how
why is it important?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So a rite of passage is moving from one stage of life into the next, right? And we can do this through some very intentional guided experiences. So we think of like the ultimate rite of passage is being born, right? And dying. And then there are many other stages of life along the way. And some of the more significant stages that we can mark through a rite of passage are from childhood into adolescence. And then again, adolescence into adulthood. So the way that I work these and the way that this happened for many, many years is we would take the children. In this case, I work mostly with boys becoming men, take the boys out of the comforts of their everyday life and do some difficult things and help them understand what stage they're stepping into. So what does it mean to be a man? What does it mean to be on the path of becoming a man in a good way? What are the elements of living a life as a good man? And then giving some experiences. In this case, we work with a lot of discomfort. We were outside. I just did one a couple of weekends ago, and it was an epically wet weekend out here in Northern California. And we were outside pretty much the whole weekend, just soaked to the bone and really enjoying the beauty of the natural world and really deepening the conversation about what does it mean to be a good man in today's world.
And is that normally with just the boys becoming men, or are their fathers there with them? Do you do both together or separate?
Yeah. So there's really two stages of a rite of passage, right? So I work primarily with 10 to 14 year olds who are coming from childhood into adolescence. They're not yet men, right? That stage comes a little later, 17 to 21, right? When there's the passage into adulthood. So for the boys becoming teenagers, becoming adolescents, we work very closely on deepening the bond between father and son. We work really on giving them as a duo lots of deep experiences together and opening up new conversations and really strengthening the bond so that the father figures can be there during those very tumultuous puberty years, the teenage years, which we know are some of the most difficult.
Is that why you chose 10 to 14? Because it is so difficult and it is such a pivotal time in a young man's life?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I also just, frankly, I just looked at I have a soon to be 13-year-old son. And so I started having this idea when he was about 10 years old, and I could see and feel him changing. he was pulling back from me. He was doing what he was supposed to do, which is that process of individuation, becoming his own person. And I had always had this picture of like when puberty hit for him, I just had this picture. The image in my mind was I want to be around fire with the men in my life that I really trust, like my deepest brothers. I wanted to be around a fire with them and have him understand the elements of what they thought it meant to be a good man in this world. And so that's basically what we've done. We've created that experience where there's a small group of boys with their father figures and some mentors there, having those discussions and doing some really hard things together out in nature.
And now, Luke, what is important for a 10 to 14 year old boy? And then follow up to that, I'd love to know your perspective on what is important at that 18 to 21.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks for highlighting.
Yeah, each stage is a little different, right? So the 10 to 14, what we find is starting to be really good at something in their life, right? Whatever it happens to be. So for my son, it's mountain biking. For somebody else, it might be music. For me, when I was that age, I was an actor. It was being involved in the theater. And so everybody has their thing that they start to gain some mastery over. It's also the beginning to be able to pull away from the parents in a way where there's still a connection and a bond, but there's like a healthy individuation that we see is like really starting to find their way and their own independence in the world. So how as parents can we strengthen that and allow that to happen in a way where there's trust and safety? So that's some of what we work on is helping them start that process. We also do a huge piece around changing bodies and puberty and consent and touch, right? Because that's also going to be happening very soon. And so we want to make sure that our young men, these boys becoming men, have all the tools they need to be a good man in that respect as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What is the biggest mistake you're seeing fathers make to support this 10 to 14?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, fundamentally, I think that every child, all they really want is the loving presence of their parents, right? They want those moments of being able to look them in the eye and know that their parents are there for them. And what I see is, as fathers, it's pretty easy to delude ourselves with busyness and not show up, right? And the lack of presence, I think, is the biggest mistake. The lack of putting in the time and the effort to really get curious about what's happening in our children's lives. What I see is distraction either with work or screens or all the things that keep us from those moments of really understanding what are the unique needs of our young people.
Love it.
And now you work with, I'm assuming men heal from divorce. Is that true? Or the whole family? What does that work look like for you?
Yeah. So I'm a rites of passage guide. So I take these boys and their father figures through these rites of passage experiences. I also am a men's coach. So I work with men, particularly around healing from big breakups and divorce, helping them navigate the challenges of divorce. This is based in my own experience of 7-8 years ago, going through a divorce in a way that was painful, yet also necessary. And in the end, I find myself in pretty great harmony with my co-parent and having healed my own heart in a deep relationship. So I work with men on kind of those pieces. How do you navigate divorce in a as peaceful way as possible, so that they might bounce back and find love again?
Now, Luke, when reading through your stuff, I also saw the words shadow work. How much does that shadow work? Well, one, if you'll explain to our listeners a little bit about what shadow work is, and how does that play into that divorce healing? Because I have no doubt that that probably was a portion of your process.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, the concept of shadow work is one that comes from a Swiss psychiatrist, Carl Jung. The idea there is that we're born 360 degrees of light, pure possibility, and then life happens to us. People tell us to be a certain way or not to be a certain way. Boys don't cry. You look so ugly with tears in your eyes. You know, we're shaped into being a certain way, and that 360 degrees of light starts to get a little bits of shadow in it, right? And so the shadow is the unexpressed, unacknowledged parts of ourselves, unacknowledged pain, unacknowledged possibility, unacknowledged power. Right. So shadow work is turning back into those parts, going into the uncomfortable places in our heart and our mind, things from our past that require some attention, some healing, some fresh perspective, some new forms of kind of embodying that as a way of becoming who we truly are meant to be, right? So it's really that deeper soul healing that happens. And so in the context of a big breakup or divorce, right, we can often see where either the pain of that actual relationship has some things that are unattended and need to be metabolized in our own heart, or the pain of our own past, how that showed up in the relationship and led to the strain or the challenges. And so there's both the childhood shadow work and the present day shadow work, and both need to be attended if we're going to really live with a liberated heart and be able to connect deeply with another.
And now how do you start to tap into that? Because I think that addressing our shadows as parents or as spouses is really important, even to begin before a divorce happens or before a disconnection with your child happens, right? It's something that we really owe ourselves, but the others around us that benefit from our light. How do we cultivate a shadow work practice alongside someone else navigating the same path, whether it's our children or our spouse or?
Yeah, I mean, it's such an important question. And I guess, how do we cultivate it? I would say, like, looking at, we call it the three P's in shadow work, right? Persistently painful patterns. Where are the persistently painful patterns that I keep bumping up against my partner in a way that has me feeling disconnected, has us going into our reactive patterns, has us blaming the other, right? Really investigating deeply, what is my deeper programming, patterning, karma, whatever you want to call it, my psychological baggage that has me consistently doing that? And then finding places where I can bring that outside of the relationship, where I can tend to it. So for me, this is where men's work, having a good men's group has been critical that helps me do this type of work. My own psychotherapist, my own men's coach, going to actual events where this is what they do. They help you metabolize all of these persistently painful patterns so that I don't have to bring it into the relationship so much and work it out so deeply there. I can have a place outside of the relationship to liberate it and then show up fully in the relationship.
Hey there, friends. Let's talk about what really matters in life: money, freedom, and family. You know, the things that keep us going, but occasionally drive us crazy as well. Now imagine if you could have all three at once. Crazy, right? To think that? But it's possible with mine and Jamie's passive income playbook. It's the perfect blueprint for creating a build-to-rent passive income generating real estate portfolio that gives you and your family the freedom and passive income that you deserve. Now, I'm not just talking about some small change here. We're talking about real tangible income that will allow you to never miss that family event, that ball game, or the vacation ever again. Now, I know what you're thinking. Oh, but investing in real estate is so hard and time consuming. But fear not, my friend. The passive income playbook makes it easy and very straightforward, step by step. So why not visit jjplaybook.com today and schedule a conversation with one of our sales counselors and download your own copy. Trust me, it'll be the best investment you make this year. Besides, maybe you get that feeling that you're going to buy back your time and also create a legendary family life. Because let's be honest, what's better than financial freedom and quality family time? Not much, except maybe that peace of mind that comes when you know you'll never have to choose between work and family again. So go ahead, make the investment and prioritize what truly matters in life. Your family will thank you. One more time, go ahead and visit jjplaybook.com.
Well, I'd imagine persistently painful patterns, and I've heard that before, but it's been a while. That wouldn't only just fall over into your relationship with your significant other, but to the children as well.
For sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is the thing where becoming a parent, if we really want to lean in, it really can be like our way to our spiritual path, really, you know, our way of healing all of the unacknowledged pain of the past so that we show up as the humans we want to be. I just have this very consistent experience as a parent. I don't know about you all, but I always thought I would be a certain type of parent. And then there's the parent I actually am. And there's this gap, right? And I have just learned to pay attention to that gap, because in that gap is where all of the shadow work can happen. Anytime I get snappy with my kids, or I check out, or I say something that I regret later, there's an opportunity for me to go back and do some work around, where is that really coming from in me? And why is that unconscious pattern just playing out again? And that's shadow work, right? Doing that work, that deep investigation, and feeling the feelings that are beneath those habitual patterns.
And is there one that just rises to the top? You're like, look, there's lots of persistent painful patterns, but this one, through all my work, through what I've done, through my own experience, through the men's groups I'm in, the ones I've coached, is
like
there one
common pattern?
Is there one that just is a really comes to the top. Like, gosh, I have that. There's one that's so common. I'd love people to know what it is.
Yeah, in my parenting, and it's my rigidity for me. It's how I have to have things a certain way and I'm inflexible. And if I don't get it the way that I thought it was supposed to be, that I will push back and fight and cause tension in all of my relationships. In parenting and in relationship, I'm constantly working my rigidity, my inflexibility. And the other way to get at what's my biggest shadow is to ask the people around me, like, what is the area that you think I have the most work to do, or the thing that you bump up in me that is the most challenging, right? And I also coach entrepreneurs, right? And one of the main tools we use as in coaching is a 360 review, right? If you want to know how you're showing up as a leader in your company, ask the 10 most senior people that you work with the most, and they'll tell you how they perceive you. It's the same thing in our lives, right? Like, we can ask. And so the thing that I constantly get back is I sometimes come off as aloof and arrogant. And so for me, this is about really that arrogance is about a defense mechanism around my own emotional vulnerability and my own protective mechanisms around people's judgment of me. So I've learned that's my shadow that I, in an investigation about how to liberate, but we all have our unique flavors of that, right? So if you want to know what your shadow is, just ask the people that are closest to you and they'll tell you.
And it can show up, just the idea of it showing up. It's your own light, but we carry it into our children. So one thing just personally that you and I have talked about, when I was 16, 17, I was with a group of friends. Someone walked up, gave everyone in the group a hug except for me. And I was like, oh, no hug. And then he proceeded to say, well, you're kind of like unhuggable. And I was like, that was like the weirdest thing in the world to me, because I thought, gosh, I feel like I probably need the hug more than anybody else. It's so weird that this woman would want to hug me. But as I've looked at that and grown from that in our relationship, like, I think about that all the time. Like, I want the children to know, like, they can come to me, they can snuggle me. And that 20, however many years, oh God. Yeah. Oh, however many, like math here.
12 years ago.
Yeah. Not that long ago. That has stuck with me. And I keep thinking, like, make sure my lap's available, make sure my arm's available. But I always walk into a room and that thought is on me, like, make sure people know they can hug you. I know it's like the weirdest thing, but it's a thing that lives inside of me and it's part of my shadow. But it's something that I feel like through my awareness, but then also through our relationship of feeling so like physically wrapped by you, I'm like, okay, I'm very huggable. Look how huggable I am.
And I've always said it's amazing at that age what can stick with you. Mm. Because I've always joked that I'm like, well, that kid was intimidated because you were so damn gorgeous. He didn't feel he could hug you. Like, mm-hmm. I've rewritten it in a different way. But we hold on to that. And that's where we want to show our kids. I think one of the biggest lessons, and just to go back, Luke, to what you said, because I don't want it to be overlooked. You just said, which is very hard for entrepreneurs. You just said, look, I'm viewed as aloof and arrogant. Now, that's not a compliment in any shape, way, or form. But what the compliment here is to be able to take that constructive criticism and then do something with it. If anything, I'm trying to teach our kids, it's that. Mm-hmm. Because I used to be really shitty at that and I'm still working on it. But I remember we still laugh because one of our teens got in trouble and we were kind of sitting down and going over it. And our one teen said to the other, he's like, yeah, you know, you got to be a little more humble. Like, look at dad. He messes up all the time, but then he apologizes. And I was like, that's the best backhanded compliment I've ever gotten. So but it's that thing. The reason I'm going back to this is, what have you done? Like, what's a starting step for people to be able to take that? Because a lot of us were like, the guard's up. It's not coming down. Like, screw that. I'm like,
so your top shadow tip would be like, apologize is what you're saying. Like, you have to be humble enough to be like, oh, sometimes I'm wrong.
Or what Luke is saying, like, I've accepted that people around me who I know, like, and trust are saying I can come off as aloof and arrogant. Doesn't mean I am aloof or arrogant, but it's coming off like that. Just being open to that. Like, what work have you done or steps have you taken just to be able to hear that? Because look, there's a time in my life I couldn't hear it. Probably you couldn't hear it. So I didn't know if there was kind of a stepping stone for that. Because I think that's where people get stuck. Just being able to hear that from their wife, from their children, from their top people. It's not easy.
Yeah. So first of all, I think you're right that it is difficult at first to receive very cutting feedback. I would just say that I don't know if it's a step or it's a mental model framing around this, which is there is incredible power in knowing how others perceive me. I now have power to change my ability to influence people to get things done. I mean, think about it just through the lens of an entrepreneur, right? There's something about when I understand how I'm perceived, I then have agency about how to better navigate and influence the people around me to get things done. If I'm on a big, bold mission of building an epic company, like I need to know how people are perceiving me. It's the same thing in relationship. If I really want to live a deep life with deep connections and deep impact with those that I love in my family and with my partner, I need to understand how I'm bumping up against them. And there's great power in that. If we go back to the Oracle of Delphi, right? The temple, the Oracle of Delphi, one of the like sacred sites of Greek culture, right? Inscribed on the temple is know thyself. Know thyself. Yeah. I mean, the classic, they knew that this is the path to living a powerful, full life of great impact and great connection is know thyself. So it's a framing for me about personal power. If I'm walking around with a big blind spot and nobody cares enough to tell me or they're too intimidated, then I'm missing a massive opportunity to be a much more embodied, full-hearted person in the world. So I'll take the feedback every day.
I love that.
Luke, how do you model this? Or how do you encourage fathers to model this for their sons? Like, do you just bring them out right into the conversation?
Yeah. So there's a couple of ingredients here. First of all, I think it's important for us to snap our relationships out of habitual patterns. So this is why a rite of passage program is really helpful. It gets us out of the daily rut of like the Tuesday on the way to band practice or sports practice where we're just talking about the same old stuff. Sometimes these relationships, especially the parent-child relationships, need to get out into some new, novel, fresh place. So on a trip, on an adventure, I'm a huge fan of like getting our kids out of habit and showing them something fresh and new. So that's step one. Step two, I would say, is radical curiosity on the part of the parents first, rather than going in with some agenda, getting very curious about what our children's experience is about life and then about us as parents. So asking a lot of questions, open-ended inquiry questions, and then in that conversation, really asking like, how are you experiencing me as a parent? What's something you're loving about me as a parent? What's something you would want to change, want me to work on? Where do we need to work on our relationship together? And then the third piece, Jim mentioned this, is I think probably the three most important words we can share with our children as parents is, I am sorry. It helps model that continuous learning and growth and that it's okay to make mistakes and that we all are going to bump up against each other and hurt each other at times. And it's much more important about how we repair than we actually how we do it, right? So maybe that's a starting point. I don't know. I don't think there's probably one way to do this, but
I think that's a great starting point. And going back, the know thyself, that is such a healthy, deep, fundamental hack, I think, to life. And unfortunately, what we've seen for at least our vision on schools and the normal traditional education, it really cheats us out. So we have to step in and give that to our children and even to our spouse and family. Keep getting to know yourself because it wasn't focused on at school. You had to learn the dates and names of everyone else but yourself. Mm. And so we always try to, with our children, say, hey, all those things are great, but you're the most important person in history right now to understand. That's going to give the most enlightenment and direction in your life.
Yeah, no doubt about it.
Well, Luke, overall, people are, we know because we're in this, they are looking for kind of these rhythms and these rites of passages and just the connection. I mean, the fact that you said your connection experiences, some people think that's goofy. When we've interviewed thousands of people and worked with them saying, yeah, I just feel like my life lacks connection. Mm-hmm. You're starting out, you're back 8 years ago. I don't know if you're having financial struggles, but you're working through a divorce the best way you can. Let's say if you mounted on that, there was financial difficulties with your business ventures. People are in that place. Where do you tell them to take that first step when they're going through this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good to find, you know, trusted men in their life. For men, I mean, I work mostly with men, so let me just speak through that lens. And I think it's probably analogous for women as well, right? Find a circle of women that can support you. But for me, I point them towards just finding a band of brothers that hold them in a way that has both challenge and support, right? Hold them in a way that says, like, I got you, I'm here for you, and you can do better, brother, deeper. You can go deeper than this, where there's both a sense of like having somebody's back, but also holding them to account, holding them to their feet to the fire around how they need to shed and transform. So, and then, yeah, finding a guide, somebody that's been there before, whether it's a coach or a therapist or someone that can help pull you through. I had an incredible men's coach during this period of my life that I just couldn't have done it without him. His thing for me was like, you think that your marriage is over. You need to spend the next year of your life making sure that you've tried everything you possibly can to meet her needs and have your needs be met and hang in there. If at the end of a year, you know, or I think he said he started it at 6 months, it ended up being a year for me. At the end of that, you've done everything you possibly can to save your marriage and you still feel like it is untenable, then you know that you did it. One of the worst things that could be is that you could have done something and it just eats away at you over time, right? So finding somebody that can take you through that process of making sure and really with all your soul trying to make your marriage work. And then if it's very clear, then helping navigate the divorce in a way that is generous to the person that you're breaking up with, that is puts the children at the center if there are children, and just honors your own heart. So,
and now, Luke, why is it important for men to be led by a man? Or why is it important? You know, let's talk a little bit about that space, because why women and women, and why is it important for a man to be led by a man?
It makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, just to be clear, in this process for me, I had my men's coach, I had my men's group, and this is how I recommend it with the men I work with. And I also had a therapist that was a woman, and I had other women in my life that were also supporting me. I don't think it's like we just go off, but I think an ingredient that's often missing is men supporting men and women supporting women, right? There's something about when we can be in that shared experience of knowing what it means to walk around in a male body and be raised as a man in this culture. There's something unique about that and distinct. And I think there's something really powerful in it to have that shared experience and shared perspective and to alleviate any sort of tension that may be happening in my own heart and mind around my relationship with women or a woman's relationship with men, to be in a place where that is just off the table for some short period of time. It allows, I think, deeper level of healing and empowerment to happen.
And do you think that it's important? I mean, I know that you said you had a female therapist as well, but the majority of your guides have been male. Mm-hmm. Do you think that's important as well for young men? Just as important for young men that are going through these transition times to have male role models and male guides?
Well, I think
questions.
No, it's a great,
something we've talked about actually.
Yeah, because maybe I could tell you my context.
Yeah,
I'm very sensitive in, like, I thrive in female relationships. I get along great with any men. However, a mind and a vulnerability space, it's a little bit different for me with a man, because then I'm entering into a vulnerable relationship with another man, a mind trust. You know, I'm letting another man into all of these spaces that only my husband enters into, or like a spirit guide, God, whatever. And so it's awkward for me intimately. And so I just didn't know if there's something in studies. Did you know that that's why my whole, I don't know.
No, I was thinking more. We've talked about the fact, Luke, where when you see some of the very sad stats about a fatherless home, the higher likelihood of drug abuse, the higher likelihood of prison, like, it disheartened me. I didn't want to believe them. And then for our own work, digging into them, going, wow, that male role model, especially for a young boy, can be so important. That's more what I...
Oh, okay. No, that's great.
Yeah. Well, I think there's truth in both of these, right? So I think everybody needs to find their own path around this. But as adults, I know that I want women that can support and challenge me, and I want men that can support and challenge me. There's something in our culture that we miss out on elder wisdom. For example, I found this elder woman that is just, her name's Grandmother Sarah, and she does work around lineage and she does work around ancestors. And I go to her and she's a gray-haired, crone, elder, wise woman that sees me in a way that no one else sees me. And it's such a gift to me. She calls something out of me that is in this feminine, wise grandmother way that no one else does. So I think it's important to have that, right? It's important to have all the textures of wisdom in our life and be held by a lot of different type of people. To your point about the lack of male role models, this is very real. The absence of the father figure is one of the great sorrows of our time. So much of our social isolation, so much of the harm that's caused in the world is because of the lack of healthy male role models and the lack of a frame. And this is what we're trying to do with Rite of Passage work, a frame, a model of stepping into what does it mean to be a healthy man in today's culture. That narrative has been crumbled, right? When I say the word masculinity, what's the first thing that most people think of? The word toxic, right? So what we're trying to do is rewrite that script around what does it mean to be in healthy masculine, a healthy man, to be in healthy masculinity. And I think we need role models. We need men that can show up and do that so that the boys know what they're stepping into. Right now, they're just stepping into trying to find some way to stay connected, right? Humans will do anything to stay connected, even if it means super maladaptive ways, even if it means feeding the ego at the cost of the people around them, the planet, their own relationships, so causing great harm. So the desire here is to create a frame, to create an architecture of what does it mean to be a healthy man in today's world, and then invite the boys into that.
I love that idea, that's a framework, because it is. It's so interesting, like feminine got turned into feminist, and masculine got turned into toxic masculinity. I mean, it's just such an unfair frame, as you said.
Well, we always say real masculinity is the opposite of toxic.
Yeah.
It's all the things they're considering toxic that is weak, we believe, and not strong masculinity.
That frame is so powerful.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, yeah, I mean, if we really want to unravel this idea of toxic masculinity, it's just a lot of boys, wounded boys, trying to work it out as in adult male bodies, right? They're hurt hearts that are just looking for some way to just exist, show that they exist, proving their power, their dominance over people rather than power with. So how do we fix that? What's the upstream fix to that problem? It's making sure that the boys have meaningful connections with the father figures in their lives and that they have a connection to their own heart and their own mind. So there's a know thyself component of training towards really deep self-awareness, and then having some sense of purpose in the world. Who do they want to become? What do they want to contribute? And I believe a connection to the earth, a connection to the wonderment and awe and the beauty of the earth, because once we have that, how could we do anything but protect it?
Yeah. Oh, that's so good. I want to ask one last thing, and I know we're bumping up against our time, but I'm just wondering, can you give us an example a rite of passage that you've taken others on, maybe a young adult one? Because Jim takes each of our young men on an 18-year-old adventure. And this year, our second one is coming up for his. And so I'm just curious, what are the elements that you bring into yours? And what are an example of one that you've done?
Yeah. Yeah. Happy to share. So I actually run a program called the Father-Son Connection Experience. And we bring boys and their dads out together into the wilderness. And I like to do it as a group just because there's a lot of shared learning in that. So we did one on the mountain, on Cobb Mountain in Northern California. And some of the elements are, as I mentioned, being in discomfort. So we do things like cold plunge with them, training them around meditation and breath work ahead of time, and then have them get in super cold water. We do a lot of training, like light martial arts and training the body, getting the body strong, training the mind, training the heart. We do some shadow work with the boys, right? So we have them face some part of themselves that gets in the way of them becoming the man they want to become. And then we send them out hours every day on one-on-one hikes with their dads, right? We have a lot of time, at least an hour and a half, sometimes 2-3 hours a day where they just go get lost in the woods together. There was this great poet named Robert Bly who wrote about men's psychology back in the 80s and 90s. And he talked about the feminine in each of us feels most connected sitting in a circle and speaking to each other. The masculine in all of us is most connected walking side by side. And he said, in the forest, he also said, probably not saying much, right? So this idea of like being walking side by side together is more of the masculine way of connection. And so we just send these guys out with their dads. And yeah, that's, I think, some of the deepest connection that we can offer.
That's beautiful. I love it.
Now, Luke, where can our listeners learn more about you and your programs?
Yeah. So that program is the Father-Son Connection Experience, and it's at fathersonconnection.com. They can also find me on my personal website at lukeentrop.com.
Perfect.
Luke, this was great. I know Jamie got notes. I got notes. We love what you're doing. Please keep doing it. And we'll look forward to connecting again soon because we like what you're up to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.
Podcast of your own.
Yes. Please. You have a podcast.
Tell us yeah. I have a podcast called Crazy Wisdom. You can find it anywhere you listen to your podcasts. And this is just about all of the wild places we find ourselves on in our quest to live a deeper life.
Great. Thanks. Awesome. Thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for joining the 18 Summers podcast and putting your family in priority position. Subscribe and leave a review and help other families just like you.